Stave 2. I am the ghost of Christmas past, and have come to remind you of your humble beginnings and how lucky you have been.
It wasn't luck, said Eben defiantly, staring at the image of a young man dressed from head to toe in a spotless white shroud. It was damned hard work that got me where I am.
With a little help from others more generous than yourself, perhaps? Replied the ghost.
Without another word, he spirited himself out of the phone, took Eben firmly by the arm and whisked him high into the air before he was even aware of what was happening. The ghost transported the terrified Eben out of his house and above the streets of the town and on over the familiar scenes of his youth, before depositing him on the pavement outside the gates of his old primary school. It was the first time he'd returned to St. Bede's since he'd left many years ago. Encouraged by the ghost, Eben walked through the gates and into a playground full of boisterous, chattering children. A bell rang, and they all made their way slowly back to their classrooms. He saw himself sitting at a desk in the back row between Dick Wilkins and Bob Cratchit, his two best childhood friends. Dick, as usual, was head down, studying in his relentless effort to be top in every subject, as he invariably was, except in maths, where Eben always beat him.
"Do you remember them?" asked the ghost.
"Of course I do. Dumbo and Swatty. I lost touch with Dick when he won a scholarship to the grammar school, while Bob and I both failed the 11+.
Despite the fact you cheated by trying to copy Dick Wilkins' answers, the ghost reminded him. Eben began to shudder.
And when you were caught, Dick wouldn't sneak on you, and you got away with it.
That's what I call a friend. Because it meant you were able to join Marley and Company as an apprentice.
Do you remember who else applied for that position?
Bob Cratchit. Ha! But I made sure he didn't get it when I told him the wrong time for the interview.
And what happened to Bob?
He did all right, said Eben, without feeling. Mr. Marley offered him a job at the football club as a junior groundsman on £8 a week, while I got 11.
But he was your best friend, said the ghost.
At the time, perhaps. But no longer, Eben said, with a dismissive wave of a hand. I was on the fast track, while he remained in the starting blocks.
Time to move on a few years, said the ghost.
Without another word, he whisked Scrooge back into the air and transported him up a hill to what the young Eben and his friends used to call the posh end of town, where every house had a garage. This time Scrooge was deposited outside a magnificent town house, from which he could hear the joyful sounds of a large family enjoying Christmas lunch together. He approached the open door tentatively, but didn't enter until the ghost gave him a firm shove. Mr. Marley, dressed in a red jacket and bow tie, stood at the head of the table in the brightly lit dining room, dominated by a large Christmas tree that was draped in twinkling fairy lights and jeweled coloured baubles. He sharpened his knife before setting about carving the largest goose Eben had ever seen. He filled each plate with portions that would not require a second helping. Bowls of Brussels sprouts, roast potatoes, buttered carrots, and pigs in blankets circulated and never seemed to run out. Once again, the young Eben was seated between his old friends, Bob Cratchit and Dick Wilkins. Bob hadn't changed, and neither had his job. He was still a groundsman at the sports club, while Eben was no longer an apprentice but articled to the firm of Marley and Company. Dick had just graduated from University College, Oxford, with an honours degree and had been offered a position with the town's leading architectural practice,
who Marley regularly employed for his projects. The three of them were attempting to bring each other up to date between mouthfuls, until Eben became distracted by a young woman seated on the other side of the table. She must have been a year or two younger than Eben, and her head of fair curly hair, exquisite oval face, and piercing blue eyes meant that he hardly touched the feast in front of him. The first girl he'd ever given a second look. On more than one occasion she graced him with a shy smile, but he just bowed his head and blushed. Another first. Marley looked across the table at his three protégés and wondered which one of them would win such a worthwhile prize. Eben learned from Bob that her name was Belle, and she was Mr. Marley's niece, and from Dick that she was hoping to go to art school and become a designer. But even armed with this vital piece of information, after the Christmas pudding had been devoured and they had all gone through to the drawing room, he didn't have the courage to sit next to her on the sofa. Dick suffered from no such inhibitions, and quickly sat down beside her and began to chat to her as if they were old friends. When it came to playing charades, Eben couldn't come up with a single book, play, or film, while Dick excelled. He was rewarded with a kiss under the mistletoe before he and Belle left the party together. "What happened next?" asked the ghost, who already knew the answer. "I went home alone. A few months later I heard that Dick and Belle had become engaged. I made an excuse not to attend their wedding, even though Mr. Marley had given everyone the day off." "Did you see them again?" "From time to time. And if it was possible, she had grown even more beautiful," said Eben, sounding sad for the first time. "Every Christmas lunch after that, I had to watch them holding hands under the table." "And you never found anyone to take her place?" "I dated a couple of girls," said Eben wistfully. "In the end, I decided to devote myself entirely to work. And it paid off, because eventually Marley made me a junior partner in the firm. From that moment on, I thought of nothing else except making more and more money. Then the day came when Marley called me to his office to tell me in the strictest confidence that he didn't have much longer to live, and he'd chosen me to take his place as the senior partner." "You must have been delighted," said the ghost, "but at the same time, sad to learn that your mentor was going to die." "I already knew," said Eben matter-of-factly, "and began cozying up to my nephew once I realized what a vast profit was within my grasp, if only I could get my hands on the football club. But I couldn't make a move while Marley was still alive." With a look of disgust, the ghost grabbed Scrooge by the collar and transported him from Marley's home across town to a churchyard, where Jake Marley's family and friends were standing around his graveside. Even as the coffin was being lowered into the ground, Eben was already speculating about how long it would take him to get his hands on the piece of land that would make his fortune. He was confident it wouldn't be too long before his nephew invited him to take Marley's place as president of the football club, when he would be certain to broach the subject of the dire state of the club's finances. Once Fred had fallen into that trap, it could only be a matter of time before... As soon as the mourners began to depart, the ghost transported the new senior partner of Morley's back to his home and left him in bed without another word. Scrooge felt rather pleased with himself and quickly fell asleep. The bedside clock flicked over from 2:19 to 2:20 when the shrill sound of his mobile phone rang for a second time. He woke with a start to find a second ghost hovering above him at the end of the bed. His eyes widened in horror at the terrifying figure draped in a grubby grey shroud, who appeared to be about the same age as himself. "I am the ghost of Christmas Present, and I am here to show you just how low you have sunk." Before he could respond, the spirit took Eben firmly by the arm, lifted him from his bed, and flew him to a council estate he'd never visited before. Outside a row of modest terrace houses stood his driver, washing the Bentley with soap and water as tenderly as if it was his own child. The front door of the house opened, and out stepped a woman carrying a baby. "Tell me their names," said the ghost. "I don't know them," admitted Scrooge. The ghost didn't comment other than to remark, "Then let's listen to what they have to say." "I don't know why you bother, Ned," the woman said. "I don't have much choice, Sylvia," he replied. Mr. Scrooge would spot a single speck of dirt on the windscreen. "It's time you told the old skinflint that you need a raise." "I can't afford to take that risk," said Ned with some feeling. "He knows only too well there's no shortage of drivers out there who'd be only too happy to take my place for even less than he's paying me." "But you haven't had a raise for over 3 years," his wife reminded him, "and he never pays you a penny overtime. Just assumes you'll always be available night and day." The baby began to cry. "And you can be sure he'll still expect you to drive him to the club for their Christmas Eve lunch without any suggestion of a bonus." Eben couldn't believe he was actually feeling a pang of guilt and said, "I've heard enough." "We've hardly begun," said the ghost, lifting him from the pavement and flying him back towards the centre of town, when they entered a shop where a couple appeared to be considering an important purchase. "This one, sir, is top of the range," said the salesman, as Bob Cratchit lifted Tiny Tim off his shoulder and placed him gently in an electric wheelchair. The little boy pressed the start button and began to glide around the shop as if it was Le Mans, even if the chair's top speed was only 5 miles an hour. He'd mastered the controls within minutes and couldn't stop yelping with delight. "How much is it?" asked Bob, as Tiny Tim continued on his circuits around the shop, the smile never leaving his face.
£4,600, plus VAT," said the salesman. "But let me assure you, sir, it will change the boy's life, and dare I mention, it will quite literally take a load off your shoulders."
"I can't afford to pay the full amount immediately," admitted Bob sadly. "But as I've just been appointed head groundsman at the local football club, could I pay in instalments?" "I'm sure we can come to an arrangement," said the salesman, as Tiny Tim manoeuvred his way between his parents. "However, we would require a down payment of £1,000, and I must warn you that should you fall behind with your payments, we would have to take the chair back." Bob didn't look at all confident and turned to Meg, who said, "We'll just have to make some more sacrifices, but it will be worth it," she added, as Tiny Tim came to a halt by their side. Bob sat down at the salesman's desk, took out his checkbook and wrote out the words, £1,000, knowing it would put him in the red for the first time in his life. As he handed over the check, he remembered the £500 the boss had left him in his will. He looked up to the sky and mouthed the words, "Thank you, Mr. Marley," which Eben heard clearly. "Let's hope your old school friend doesn't become president of the football club," said Meg as they left the shop, with Tiny Tim following close behind in his new wheelchair. "Because if he does, I wouldn't put it past him to." "I'll not hear a word against Eben," said Bob. Scrooge hadn't realized until that moment just how lucky he was to have Bob as his friend. "Where to next?" he asked quietly, hoping the ghost would say, "Time to go home," but no such luck. "Time to visit the love of your life," said the ghost. Without another word, they flew to the other end of the town, where they passed through the door of a large house as if it were open, and he was a welcome guest. Eben found himself in a sitting room, where a conversation between a husband and wife was taking place that was not full of Christmas cheer. "You should never have borrowed money from that man in the first place," Belle was saying, her hands trembling. "I had no choice," said Dick. "If I hadn't, we would have fallen behind with the mortgage payments. But if you now don't pay him back before January the 1st, we'll not only lose the house, but have to sell off the few remaining shares your father left you." "He might relent," said Dick, "if you have a quiet word with him. After all, the three of us go back a long way." Eben Scrooge feels more passionately about money than about any of his so-called friends, said Bell. "Don't forget, I wrote to him last year asking if he would support his old school, where you and he first met. And he didn't even reply, despite the fact that it was you who saved him from being expelled. So what would be the point of asking him to bail you out?" "In any case," said Belle, her voice dropping, "I wouldn't want to give the old miser the satisfaction of turning me down." "He's not that bad," said Dick. "You've always given him the benefit of the doubt," said Bell. "One of the few things we disagree on." Once again, Eben felt ashamed that he'd ever doubted his old friend. "Away, away, spirit," he begged. "How much more humiliation am I expected to suffer?" For the first time, a flicker of satisfaction passed across the ghost's features. "We're not quite finished yet," he murmured, as they left the house and headed for another part of town, without any hint of where they might be going. It wasn't long before the football club appeared through the clouds in front of them. The spirit dropped Scrooge into the only empty chair at a packed committee meeting. "But if we sell our land to Mr. Scrooge for £1 million, a member of the committee was saying, "which I don't have to remind you is our only asset, what's to stop him building a tower block on it?" "He gave me his word," said Fred. "Told me his only interest was in the future of the club, and he seemed delighted when I suggested that Wayne Ibrahim might play for England one day." "When he visited the club yesterday," piped up another committee member, "I overheard him saying on the phone, 'I don't give a damn who he plays for. So what's his word worth?'" A sentiment that was greeted with a chorus of, "Hear, hear." "But how can we hope to raise the money to build a new clubhouse and a car park without his help?" Fred asked unhappily. "I'd rather turn the offer down," said another member. "Bide our time and look for help from sources that don't have a personal agenda." "Do I have to remind you," said Fred, "that our clubhouse is almost falling down and we're currently overdrawn by," he looked down and checked the figure in front of him, £42,606. I don't think we've been left with a lot of choice. I'd rather go under than be taken over by that man.
You're talking about my uncle, Fred reminded him.
Your uncle is not you, and never will be, came back another member.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, said the club secretary, perhaps the time has come for us to put a resolution to the vote.
Agreed, said Fred.
Raise your hand if you're in favour of selling the club to Mr. Scrooge for £1 million.
Six hands were raised, including the chairman's. The club secretary duly noted the names in his minute book before saying,
those against? Six equally determined hands shot up.
The vote is tied, declared the secretary.
Six votes each. He turned to Fred and said, therefore, Mr. Chairman, you are left with the casting vote.
Fred remained silent for some time before announcing, I'm willing to give Uncle Eben the benefit of the doubt. On your head be it, Fred, murmured a dissenting voice.
Is there any other business? Asked the secretary. Can't we leave now? Pleaded Scrooge.
Yes. They are only going to decide the date of the next meeting, which, actually, you will end up deciding.
Moments later, Scrooge was escorted back to his home and tucked up in bed, but this time he was unable to sleep.
He couldn't be sure how much time had passed when the phone rang for a third time. He sat bolt upright in bed and stared at a shrunken figure that had aged beyond recognition and was now wearing a long black shroud. When the ghost spoke, his voice was frail and faltering. I am the ghost of Christmas future, he announced. Just one final visit, he promised, as he bent down and struggled to lift Scrooge from his bed.
Once again they floated slowly in the direction of the church steeple that dominated the centre of the town, where they came to a halt beside Jake Marley's grave. Next to it was a freshly dug hole, into which a coffin was slowly being lowered. A priest, he didn't recognize, was solemnly reciting a passage from the funeral service, but there were no mourners standing around the grave, paying their respects. Give me another chance, pleaded Scrooge, as the first sod of earth was cast into the gaping hole.
Ashes to ashes, intoned the vicar, as Scrooge's eyes settled on the gravestone which was inscribed with the name Eben Scrooge, and the dates 1971 to 2020.
No, no! Scrooge shouted at the top of his voice, but there was no one there to hear him, other than the grave diggers. He turned in desperation to the ghost, his eyes pleading.
But the spirit merely gave a faint smile before melting into the ether, leaving behind only the echoing words, I cannot help you unless...